Hello and welcome to In Conversation with me, Mark Boucher Gibbs. This is a podcast series where my guests give us an insight into their businesses as they operate within Scotland's arable supply chain. We'll be discussing what's topical currently in the marketplace and what might be on their desks in terms of ambitions and drivers going forward. Kindly joining me today are Robin Barron of East of Scotland Farmers. Hi, Robin.
Hi, Mark. How are you?
Very well, thank you. And also Gary Catto of Baird's Malt. Hi, Gary.
Hi, Mark.
Robin, we've talked briefly before prior to this podcast, but I don't know a huge amount about your business and your role within it. Would you mind perhaps giving us a bit of background as to where you're operating and the sort of commodities you're dealing with?
Sure. Well, East of Scotland Farmers is a cooperative. So we're owned by a large number of farmers. We actually have 170 or so farmers who supply us with grain. And our core business is to dry, store and market that grain, which is predominantly malting barley, although we do handle some wheat, oats, feed barley and oilseed rape. And we handle about 90,000 tons of grain in total. We also supply fertilizer, seeds, agronomy advice and ag chem to our members. And we have a country store which sells everything from welly boots to animal health products and literally hundreds or thousands of products in between. We run a couple of our own lorries and we have a grain lab as well to oversee the quality function of the business. So it's a fairly old-fashioned business model in that we do a lot of things in a relatively small geographic area, which is Perthshire, Angus and into Fife.
And Gary, yourself with Baird's Malt, I gather historically you were sort of with Highland Grain and have moved.
Yes, Mark. Yes. So my tenure with Scott Grain, which is a trading subsidiary of Baird's Malt, is a short one so far. So I'm only in week 8. So still in the rabbit in the headlights phase. But yeah, you're correct. So I worked for Highland Grain Limited, which is a similar business model to Robin's, but based on the Black Isle, just north of Inverness in the Highlands. With Highland Grain, we had round about 75 members from Gosby in the north, down through east to Ross in the Black Isle, and along the Murray coast as far as Forres. And we handled in the region of 40,000 tons of malting barley, which went to in different directions, but ultimately to the Scottish whisky industry. So with my Scott Grain hat on, 8 weeks in. I'm based out of Inverness, out of the maltings in Inverness, but Scott Grain is spread throughout Scotland, but also England. We have maltings in Inverness, Arbroath, Pencaitland, just outside Edinburgh, and then there's also Whittam and now Burton as well in England. So slightly different scale to what I've been used to, but yeah, getting there slowly.
Yeah, so sounds quite a, I mean, both businesses are historic, aren't they? I think, Robin, yours is goes back sort of almost 900 years, is it?
Or early? Not quite. We were set up in 1959.
Oh, okay. So, so 70, 80 years.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Scott Grain, 1823, Scott Grain was kicked off. So just over the 100 years now.
And predominantly malting barley we're talking about today. Is it Witham down in England that you've got a plant?
Yes, Mark, yeah. So Scott Grain stroke Baird's has just gone through a bit of a restructure. High-level ownership has changed. And as such, it's not just Witham down south now. There's also maltings in Burton, which Baird stroke Scott Grain will be responsible for supplying the product into it.
I noticed I was looking at some figures last night that particularly over the last 4 years, the sort of demand for malting barley has climbed quite considerably. And Julian Bell, one of our consultants, often gives PowerPoints and he talks about the increasing processing capacity of sort of malting barley. Have you seen a sort of shift in your businesses in terms of malting barley traded, Robin, if I come to you first, or have it been relatively unchanged?
Yeah, I mean, we've certainly seen growth. I've been in this job for almost 20 years now, and the tonnage that we've handled has almost doubled in that time. So there's been a gradual growth over the years. It's interesting because the supply chain is in various steps. So you have the production of barley on farm. You have the capacity to dry and store it. You then have the capacity to malt it. And you then have the ultimate market, which is the distillers. And so they have to grow roughly in sync with each other. But what you find is that there will be growth in different stages of the supply chain at different times. And the rest of the supply chain has to sort of bend itself to meet the changing patterns. But yeah, there's definitely growth there.
Is that something you can align with, Gary, the sort of changing modular sort of increases or catch up sort of phases?
Yeah, no, I would agree with what Robin said. I mean, I haven't been in the trade quite as long as Robin. When I went to Highland Grain, that was the first time I was involved in the spring barley supply chain into the whiskey industry. But even in that time, which is, you know, 6 years now, I've noticed a distinct change. I think the trajectory of global whiskey sales over the last sort of 15 years has certainly gathered pace latterly, which has resulted in a huge amount of investment at distiller level, which has meant that investment at malting level, which was, you know, arguably long overdue, is starting to happen. And yeah, it's been a very variable market, but there's certainly been an increase in demand. You know, whiskey production is probably at the highest level it's been for a long, long time. Global markets such as India, Asia, America are, have grown and are still growing in some regards. So I think it's good for the industry. You know, the investment that we've seen at the malting level, Inverness here put in an extra 50,000 ton capacity a couple of years ago. They've just been given the go ahead for a further 57,000 ton capacity over the next couple of years. And there's other businesses within Scotland that are looking to invest in malting capacity as well because of the demand at the distilling end.
And is that demand sort of export driven? I mean, are we seeing, I know there were issues recently with sort of export licenses, et cetera, to the USA, and they got revoked. How much of the, if your markets are outside the UK? Quite a bit, I should think.
Well, from a whiskey perspective, yes. I mean, I think that you could probably never sell another bottle of whiskey in the UK again, and it wouldn't make a dent in their global sales. But you certainly, from my previous job, and I suppose in this one to an extent, the spring barley that we buy in Scotland stays in Scotland, to be malted in Scotland, to be distilled in Scotland. The whiskey sales is something that's just sort of almost a little bit step away from where myself and Robin are.
So that sort of brings me on to how you, and something I don't understand fully, but how you procure your year's supply through the season. Robin, from a cooperative point of view, I presume you are marketing grain in a pool, are you? Or do members have the option to sell spot individually or contract individually?
No, we work on a pool basis. So once they join the cooperative by buying a modest shareholding, and it costs £150 to join East of Scotland Farmers, members are then asked to commit at the start of each year. So usually in December, we ask them, what area or tonnage do you want to commit to our pools for the following harvest? And we collect that information and build a knowledge of the tonnage that we think we're going to have. And bear in mind, we allow our members to commit on an area basis so that they can rest assured that whatever they're growing, they have an outlook for. They don't have to guess what their yield is. We will make those judgments ourselves. And we will line up markets for the grain that our members are going to produce. And we will also say to our members in advance, these are the varieties we need you to grow, because these are the varieties that we've got sales for, and we don't want to be handling too many different varieties because it then ties up too many silos or sheds, some of which might get only half filled. So we usually run with two main varieties. Currently it's Laureate and Diablo. We already know, we already know what tonnage we're going to have for this harvest. If the rain doesn't stop, we might not have any. We're working on a program of what we're going to have and what we'll have to market this harvest.
So, yes, I mean, practically speaking, we're here currently at the beginning of April. There's no spring barley gone in the ground because of the weather and the amount of rain we've had. So at this time of year, you are... your order books, I presume, are filling, and you've got a good idea already of what will move post-harvest 24?
Yeah, I mean, we have legal commitment from all our members already of what they're going to supply to us this harvest. So we're still outloading last year's barley, which is all sold to customers, including Baird's. And at the same time, we know what's coming in. We're actually delivering, or we've probably finished now, delivering seed and fertilizer out to our members to allow them to sow the crop. So there's a crossover of crop years at this stage. But we know pretty much what we're going to see this harvest, subject to yield and quality.
Yeah, so come harvest, the stores fill up. I get the impression that a majority of the movements are done in the sort of late summer, autumn, and not a lot is held over in store into the new year. Would you agree with that, Robin?
No, I mean, we take in spring barley as quickly as we can after it's harvested, and that can start as early as, I think, the 3rd of August is the earliest we've started, but some years it can be into September before we get going properly. By the end of September or middle of September in an early year, we're completely full. We often don't put any malting barley out until nearer or even after Christmas, because the barley has to recover from dormancy first. And then we'll be supplying our malts to customers right through until the following harvest to keep their maltings going until the new crop's available.
So that dormancy period happens with you before it moves in some instances.
Correct, yeah.
And Gary, how does your diary pan out for the year in terms of procurement for what you need? How do you plan that?
Yeah, it's a continual process, slightly different model to what Robin has and what I had in the previous role at Highland Grain, whereas we have a network of farm business managers that are assigned an area throughout Scotland, and within that area they will speak to and agree tonnages with farmers that wish to trade with ScotGrain. We've got a really good network of farm business managers, and they spend a lot of time on the road, a lot of time at the farm, a lot of time speaking to farmers. Because when we're on farm, they're not just buying spring barley. They're also buying other commodities as well, wheat, oats, oilseed rape, feed barley. They'll be selling them seed, chemicals, fertilizer, the sort of whole package thing. But there's the core network of long-standing farm relationships, which the farm business managers will, not that anything's guaranteed, but these guys have traded with ScotGrain for a long time and they're happy with the service and they use the other areas of the business as well. But there's a lot of time spent looking for that extra tonnage as well.
And you mentioned that we talked about the growth and the volume of Scotland, and we are producing Scotch whisky and it's Scottish by provenance. Do you get the impression that we are not running up against a limited supply at all?
I remember being told when I first started in this trade that Scotland operated, and please correct me if I'm wrong, Robin, but I'm pretty sure the figure was that we were operating in a malt deficit of around 400,000 tonnes. Now, there have been investment in Inverness, in Bucky with Boot Malt, in our Broth, with the sort of there over the years. So I would imagine that figure is less now. I don't know the total tonnage grown in Scotland of spring barley, but in a year where the yield is average and the quality is average, every grain of it will be required for the whisky industry.
I've got a feeling somewhere around 1.2 million tonnes by 2025.
Yeah, that rings a bell.
Yeah, because I think stilling wheat was about 900,000 tonnes. So by comparison, that's quite a lot of stilling wheat compared to malting barley.
Yeah.
So we talked about securing supplies. Do you get, Gary, how does it work in terms of your end users or your markets? How much do they drive when you process, or are you, processing right through the year anyway?
So most of the sites will process almost for the full year. As an example, Inverness, prior to the new tower maltings going in a couple of years ago, the malting side of the business would have to shut down during harvest intake to facilitate the intake. They couldn't do both at the same time. With the investment in the new tower maltings, malting can continue whilst intake is happening at harvest, which is a huge boost. It might only be for a 4.5-5.5 week period, but it really does take the pressure off catching up with malt production and malt sales post-harvest. What drives it? Similar to when Scott Green's got long-standing relationships with farmers, Baird's has some very long-standing relationships with distillers who come back year after year because of the quality of the malt that we put out. And ultimately, it's their requirement that drives the amount of malt that we need to make and when it's made and how it's made, whether it's peated, whether it's small batch stuff. And ultimately, that drives the tonnage target that myself and the farmers managers have to ensure that we spend all year gathering and securing.
And I'm just talking about prices. Obviously, malt barley to the farmer, prices vary depending on the year and the supply and demand. Do you see much of a fluctuation in the price of the malt that you sell, and what might be the reasons that it changes?
So that's not an area of the business that I am fully aware of. My focus is more downstream through the farm business managers to the farm gate and the purchase and selling of farm inputs and what have you. I do know that the price of malt increased considerably during the cost of energy crisis, but I also know that it's starting to, it has come back down as well. The same as any other market, there's drivers that push it and pull it.
How did you both cope with last year and the variable quality that was coming through? I was walking crops and there were, tillers, barley was re-tillering and farms didn't know when to spray it and whether they should just take the main crop or try and get two crops. Did you see that come through into the samples, Robin, that you were dealing with?
Yeah, it was certainly a more challenging year than the previous year. 2022 was a breeze with great weather and excellent yields and quality and prices. So yeah, 2023, more of a challenge. The second growth that you talked about was certainly a big concern pre-harvest. Suddenly the crops started to green up again in the beginning of July, just when you were looking for them to start turning colour, and the fields were going bright green again as a fresh batch of awns appeared. And I think there was quite a bit of concern about, well, what's going to happen to these crops? How does the farmer harvest a field that's got basically two different maturities in it? You've got the main stem of the plant, which was probably 4 weeks ahead of the tillers. And if you harvest the crop when the main stem is ready, then you're going to have a lot of greens in it. And if you wait for the secondary tillers, then the main part of the crop could well be overripe, which has problems with skinning and pre-germ if it's left too long. There was a use of Roundup to try and control the greens. There was a lot of patience. And actually, at the end of the day, the problem wasn't as bad as we'd feared. And I think that second batch of tillers actually provided the yield that allowed many farmers to record a respectable yield. The yields weren't as good as 2022, but they were a lot better than we were expecting.
Did that sort of permeate up to you, Gary, or was that sort of all screened out in the issues before you got samples?
Yeah, no, I was at Highland Grain that time last year, and we didn't see the second growth quite as bad round about Easter Ross and the Black Isle as what was happening down round Perthshire and further south. I remember on a train journey not long before harvest and being amazed at the level of the secondary growth as I was coming into Perth there in the or just south of Perth. It's not that we didn't see it, just not to the same extent. And yes, you know, we saw it coming through in the pre-delivery samples that we were picking up off farm. Did it cause as many issues? Thankfully not. No, it didn't. We were quite fortunate.
Yeah, I mean, now you mention it, I think I do recall at the time that there was comment that there was a north-south divide on the issue. So that sort of reflects with what you're saying. How do you see 2024 shaping up, Gary? There's been, I mean, AHDB in their early bird surveys sort of redid their November survey because of the wet weather and the expectation that quite a lot of wheat would shift into spring barley. Are you getting a sense that that is the case, that there will be a lot more spring barley in the ground this spring?
I think that was definitely the expectation or the assumptions that were being made earlier in the season. Will it come through? I'm not entirely sure. I don't think the Scottish spring area is going to vary a huge amount. What's this lateness going to do for yield and quality? Again, you know, it's impossible to tell. It's too early. You know, if we get fantastic growing conditions between, you know, start of May all the way through, we could be in for a fantastic crop, whether it's sown late or not. There's just too many variables to really guess. But I think farmers are certainly setting their expectations at this level, at this state, at this time. There's been a little bit sown on the Black Isle and Easter Ross. What's coming through the ground looks really good. Winter crops are looking healthy. But there's a long way to go yet, you know.
Yeah, you do sort of look out the window and get quite despondent, but actually there is still a fair bit of the season to go. I mean, Robin, what's your take on where we are today?
Yeah, I mean, we've had the wettest 6 months of winter in my memory. So a lot of the autumn crops that have survived are looking fine, but there's plenty of patches and field that have been completely drowned out. There's a lot of decisions going to have to be made about whether crops are stitched in or ploughed out or whatever. But the biggest concern right now is just the fact that it won't stop raining. The fields are saturated this spring, top dressing to be done, there's ploughing to be done, not to mention the drilling itself. I'm not too concerned that we haven't started sowing on the 4th of April. We've been there plenty of times before. I'm more concerned that the forecast doesn't actually show any signs of it changing anytime soon. So there will come a point where expectations of yield will start to diminish. But, you know, there's no need to completely panic yet. There is still time. This is Scotland. We have had late sowing seasons before.
And you mentioned Laureate and Diablo. Gary, do you get involved with the sort of variety side of what's desirable for different malts or trends that might be coming down the road?
Yeah, I think from a variety, you know, on farm, when I started at Highland Grain, Concerto was still the primary variety that we handled at Highland Grain. And the switch to Laureate was well received on farm because of the obvious jump in yield. Since then, what was that, 2018, 2019 was the sort of switch between Concerto and Laureate in the main. Certainly the last couple of years, there have been a few varieties on the periphery that looked like they might be the next big hope, but they've fallen by the wayside. You know, they need to have a package that suits the farmer, they need to go through the maltings well, and they need to provide a decent spirit yield through the distillers. So it's difficult to find one that sort of ticks all the boxes. At the minute, there are a few on the horizon that I've seen the results for through both malting and distilling and seen them in trial crops in the field. And it's the first time in the last few years where I've looked at what's on the horizon and thought, actually, some of these could make it through to decent numbers grown on farms. So there's a variety called Moronis, which I believe it's slightly earlier than Laureate, not a huge amount different in yield, but it's got a really good sort of disease package on it. And then you've got a variety called Belter, which is also starting to gain some interest. And the other one is Tennyson, which has done well in field trials, but we're yet to see the results through sort of maltings and distilling. So there's a few hopefuls. And I think in general, farmers are waiting to see what's around the corner. Those that came away from Laureate to try Diablo, it worked for some, it didn't work for all. I think, you know, certainly around the Inverness area, there's not a huge amount of Diablo grown. There's a fair chunk of Sassy grown in the area. It seems to do quite well on some farms, but Laureate is still definitely the primary, you know, probably in the region of 75%, I would say.
And is that similar for you, Robin, that sort of Laureate heavy?
Yeah, we would be 60 to 70% Laureate and the remainder Diablo. We don't do Sassy, not for any particular reason, other than we just don't want to do three varieties. So it's Diablo and Laureate for us. And, you know, we'll look at these new varieties as well, but there's always a bit of a time gap between these varieties being introduced and actually being adopted as a mainstream, because they've got to be tested by Baird's and the other maltsters to check that they actually produce the spirit yield. And then we've got to multiply up the seed and test them in different growing seasons. So, you know, with the best will in the world, even when a new variety comes through, it can be 2, 3, 4 years before it becomes a mainstream variety.
I just wanted perhaps to bring it to a close by thinking about the next 12 months, 24 months, 36 months in terms of where your emphasis is lying with the businesses. Gary, what's on your mind or coming across your desk in terms of where you want to get to?
I think one of the hot topics throughout the supply chain at the minute is definitely sustainability. Myself and Robin, I was involved in a project with Robin when I had my Highland Grain hat on. I think the project's still ongoing, where we were looking at baselining farm carbon, looking at soil health, what works for the farmer, how it would impact them as a grower and their farm business. All really good, important stuff. A lot of data to be gathered, and that's something that we're heavily involved in the Scott Green as well. We have farm field trials on farms throughout Scotland in conjunction with some of the end users. There's a huge amount of time and effort and investment going into looking to see what works, not just about carbon. It can't just be about carbon. It needs to be about soil health and how we farm more sustainably in the future and how that impacts the whole supply chain. So that's key. The other thing that's on the desk at the minute is the farmer engagement piece, which runs, I suppose, hand in hand with the sustainability, because ultimately the growers need to know what we are finding out in the trials. But there's been a distinct shift in, I certainly noticed it in my short time, that, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, as the manager in at Highland Grain, it was very difficult for me to get the ear of a distiller. I was selling to maltsters, you know, distillers were just another step away. And I don't know whether it was COVID or the energy, cost of energy crisis, but, you know, and the sustainability piece as well, I suppose, but there are conversations happening now. You know, I was in a meeting there a couple of weeks ago down in Arbroath where we had growers, farm traders, maltsters and distillers all around the same table talking about what the farmers need to know, what the distillers need to know, what data are we gathering, who's gathering it, who's going to use it. So it's a really exciting piece. It's still early days. You know, the whole supply chain is looking to see what they can and can't do. But it's really, really encouraging to see that the conversations are happening throughout the supply chain.
That's interesting. Do you see that, Robin, through the supply chain? I mean, you're slightly one step removed in closest to the farmer. But
No, absolutely. I mean, sustainability is near the top of the agenda at all times. It's such a big topic. There are obviously national, global targets in place, and I think we all have a responsibility to see if we can achieve them. It's an awful lot easier said than done. And one of the easy ways for a farmer to reduce his carbon footprint is to produce less. And what we're trying to do is to investigate how malting barley can be grown without compromising on yield and output and without compromising on profitability, because that's an important angle of sustainability as well. If a business isn't making money, then it can't make changes, it can't invest in new technologies, etc. So we want to find out how malting barley can be grown more sustainably. Unfortunately, 80% of the carbon emissions associated with malt and barley are associated with fertilizer and fuel, neither of which can be replaced by renewable sources yet. There just simply isn't the availability of them in any quantity at all. And the cost of renewable alternatives is much, much higher. So they're not they're not economically sustainable yet. But, you know, these things will be advanced, and there will be opportunities in the coming years. And we've got to stay abreast of that and keep doing the best that we can.
Yeah, thank you very, very much. Interesting talking to you. I was going to ask you both, perhaps, have you seen a premium in the supply chain for a lower carbon barley yet? I mean, I haven't actually, but I wonder if there's a time it'll come. Have you ever either seen evidence of that at all?
I have heard of incidences where farmers are being offered a renewable or a fertilizer produced from renewable energy, which costs more, and therefore there's a premium value to using it. But I think it's, you know, fairly limited instances and quantities. There's nothing widespread yet.
No, you'd echo that, Gary, would you?
Yeah, I haven't heard of any specific cases where a distiller is going out to procure barley that has a lower carbon footprint than the next door neighbour sort of thing. I would be nervous about that sort of approach. There are already quite a few filters on spring barley, you know, between weight, skinning, germination, etc., etc. So to add another filter, I think that would be quite a dangerous step. I don't think we want to monetize carbon as an offset or a bonus to the spring barley. I think there just needs to be closer working relationships throughout the whole supply chain so that best practice has been observed. You know, so what works on a farm on the south coast of Devon won't work on a farm that's 400 feet above sea level and on the Black Isle. So everybody's different. So I might be wrong, but I hope that we don't end up in a case where the procurement teams are going out hunting for barley with a lower carbon footprint.
Yeah, that's an interesting concept. I mean, personally, I think we're probably at the baselining stage and we're understanding where we're all at. But, I mean, it's a good example today. You two have kindly come together to sort of give us a bit of a link up through the supply chain. And it sounds like from what you're saying that... you know, that's happening out in industry as well with the distillers talking down through the supply chain. Thank you both very much for attending. It's been nice speaking to you. I wish you both the best for 24. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Mark.
Thanks, Mark.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of In Conversation With, which is produced in association with Scottish Government. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe or follow. If you want to find out more about anything we've discussed on the show, or you'd like to get in touch, you can find all our details in the show notes. Come back next month when Kirsten Williams will be discussing sheep health. And this episode was hosted by me, Mark Boucher-Gibbs, produced by Heather Stewart, executive producer was Kerry Hammond, and edited by Cameron Waugh.
The Farm Advisory Service Podcast. Audio advice on livestock, crops and soils, environment, rural business, and more. Brought to you in association with the Scottish Government.